Hello, and welcome to another virtual author chat at the Poison Pen. I'm John Charles, and I'm delighted to have with me today two outstanding mystery writers, Becky Clark and Vicki Delaney. Before we begin, I do have a brief commercial message. If you discover upon listening to the ladies that you can't live without one or more of their books, there's an easy way to remedy that. You can simply go online to the Poison Pen or give us a call, and we would be happy to send a copy or as many copies of their books to you as you would like. Now, without further ado, I'd like to welcome Becky and Vicki.
Thank you very much, John. It's always nice talking to you.
Love being at the Poison Pen, yep. Even if it's virtual.
Virtually, it's nice too. Let me start with asking you both to tell us about yourselves before you became authors and what your path to publication for your first book was like. And why don't we start with Vicki?
Okay, my past before I became an author, I was a computer programmer and then a systems analyst. I was a computer programmer so long ago that we didn't have computers. We did it all on paper. So I was a COBOL programmer way back in the day where you didn't have a computer on your desk. You had a bunch of paper. We did it all basically on paper. And then you sent your paper off to be data punched overnight at some remote place and it came back. And what I particularly remember about that is at my job, we had one chance to get it right. Meaning the data cards would come back, you'd run it through the big mainframe and you're allowed one mistake. Mm-hmm. You correct your mistake, you send it back, you know, get data punched again and it was expected to work properly the next day. Now, obviously things were a lot less complex than they are today. But I think that really gave me a real insight when I was started, you know, when younger people started coming in, people that had always had that computer on their desk, I think it gave me more of an insight to what the actual workings of how a computer actually worked. So anyway, that was my background. I was a computer programmer. As I got older, I became a systems analyst, which is the person that tells the computer programmer what you're wanting them to do. And I worked for a big bank here in Canada. And I was lucky enough to be able to retire when I was 55. I had started writing before that. I had a first couple of books were published, but I'm very proud to have been published by Poison Pen Press. So I know Barbara and Rob very well. They published several books by me, my entire Constable Molly Smith series, 8-book series and 3 standalones by me. And then I turned to the lighter side and I'm now writing cozy mysteries. So my path to writing cozy mysteries was through writing darker and grittier stuff for Poison Pen Press.
Hmm. How about you, Becky?
Well, let's see, a million years ago, I was a liability claims supervisor for a big insurance company. So I dealt with all kinds of attorneys and crooks and claimants and insured people. And that was a real interesting job. Went to court a lot. So that was fun. So you had to, you know, prove what you said in your file. And that was a real education, you know, into the world of legalities, I guess. And then 100 years ago, my husband and I, we opened a print shop. And so we had little kids at the time. So I stayed home with my little kids and did the marketing and that kind of stuff. And so that gave me a good foundation for the marketing part of the publishing business. And then while I was homeschooling one of my sons, we went to the library and we were looking for historical fiction books for boys. And he read them all. All my kids were pretty avid readers. And so he had read everything that the library had. And so we're leaving and he said, "Mom, why don't you just write one?" So that gauntlet was thrown. So I did. I remember I came home, you know, I live in Denver and it was a Sunday. And so we started watching the Broncos play football and I had a yellow legal tablet and I'm writing down all the periods of history that I was interested in personally and, you know, filled a couple pages and got some ideas and stuff. And so my first book came out in 2001 and that was historical fiction for middle readers set during the Civil War. And that gave me a huge foundation in publishing because I published that myself. And that was back when it was hard. There was no Amazon, there was no Kindle, there was none of that stuff existed. And so that was a real PhD in publishing, you know, and I'm so glad I did it. That book is not in print anymore, so don't go looking for it. And then, so I wrote for kids for a while, and, but you know, writing for kids is hard because of all the gatekeepers. You know, you have parents and grandparents and teachers and librarians, and it's just hard. And I wanted to do things quicker than that. So, so I started writing mysteries for adults, and I landed in the cozy world as well, simply because that's what I like to read. You know, I read everything under the mystery umbrella, but the cozies are very comforting, and it's like eating a box full of vanilla wafers, you know. I mean, it's just really nice and comforting and easy to read. And so so I was drawn to write those as well. So my first series was The Mystery Writer's Mystery, which the protagonist is a, you know, mystery writer. So not a lot of research there. So that was fun to write. So I have three of those out, and more on the way. And then my newest series from Kensington are the crossword puzzle mysteries. And the first one was Puzzling Ink. And this new one that just launched this week is Punning with Scissors. And so I've been having a lot of fun with those. You know, there's crossword puzzles in the book, but you don't have to solve the crossword puzzle to solve the mystery in the book. And it just started because I like doing crosswords, and I thought it would be fun to try creating crossword puzzles. And it is, but it's way harder than I thought it was going to be.
I bet it is.
Way harder. So I make all the puzzles for the books, and it's just fun. And so people, even if they have never done a crossword puzzle before, they are enjoying the series because it's, you know, something different. And if they do enjoy doing crossword puzzles, there's an added little bonus feature, you know, so that's fun to do. So I enjoy doing both those series.
Becky, tell us a little about your latest book, Punning with Scissors, a little bit about the plot maybe and characters.
Well, the main character in the crossword mysteries is Quinn Carr, and she boomeranged back home after having kind of a mental issue with OCD. And she, you know, obviously she had it for a long time, but it always served her well. She has organizational OCD. And so in the book, she creates the crossword puzzles. And that is the perfect avocation for OCD, because crossword puzzles are so straight and boxes and black and white, one right answer, and that's her nirvana, you know, that's what she likes. So in the first, in this, the newest one, Punning with Scissors, she is still struggling with this, but she's kind of beginning to grasp how to live her life with OCD, which is entirely possible. And in this one, she's a waitress at a diner also, and she serves the table of the retireds, which is a group of old men who come into the diner every single day and spend the whole day there and use up all her time and energy. And one of the new members of the retireds group has been of killing his husband with, he was a tailor. And so he had these tailoring shears. And that's how the man was killed, with those shears. And so not only does, you know, for lots of reasons, Quinn has to involve herself in this mystery. And not least of which is that the accused man has asked her to pick up his dog from the groomers and take care of him until he can get back home. And Quinn has no skill set there to take care of anybody else. She can barely take care of herself. So that's a fun relationship to see her dealing with this very smart dog.
Vicki, tell us about your new book, which is written as your Eva Gates persona, Deadly That's Ever right. After.
Deadly Ever After is the eighth book in the Lighthouse Library series that I write under my pen name of Eva Gates. I should mention I'm actually writing four cozy series now. The other three are all written by Vicki Delaney. So this is the only pen name I use for the Lighthouse Library series. And it's the eighth in the series, published by Crooked Lane Books. We're now eight into a series, so the characters are getting pretty much familiar to the readers and getting set in their life and all that. So first, I should mention that the Lighthouse Library series itself is set on the Outer Banks of North Carolina, just outside of Nag's Head. And the library the lighthouse in the series name is actually a real place that really exists in the real world. And it's the Body Island Lighthouse just outside Nag's Head, which is a real place. You can go there, you can visit it, you can tour it. I've done that. You can climb the 212 steps to the top. As I say in my books, it does not contain a library. It certainly isn't big enough for a library, staff, meeting rooms, offices, two staircases, a rare books room, and an apartment. But in my book, it's my version of the TARDIS or Hermione Granger's beaded handbag, far bigger on the inside than it appears on the outside. And you can buy the books in the actual Body Island bookstore at the actual lighthouse, which I was sort of pleased about. Unsure if they would sort of like people being killed in their lighthouse, but they seem to not mind. So the main character works in the lighthouse. She is the librarian. She also lives in this little tiny little apartment on the fourth level of the lighthouse tower. And I said, by now we're in book eight. So she's found the love of her life. She's happily settled into her job. She knows her co-workers, and she's found the man she's going to marry. The book begins at their engagement party. And has been mentioned throughout the series that she left Boston to get away from the man that her parents and his parents basically wanted them to get married, almost in a range. She belongs to a fairly affluent family, and it's almost sort of an arranged marriage that since she was little and since this Ricky's his name was little, the parents had hoped that they would marry. So she finally realizes that this isn't what she wants, and she leaves that life in Boston and she goes to the Outer Banks, and we've known that throughout the series. So now she's engaged to the man that she's met. They're having their engagement party, and who shows up but not only the former fiance but his mother, because his mother is determined that it doesn't really matter what either of the young people want, they are going to get married because she has her own reasons for needing that marriage. So basically that's how it begins. And as I've, I'm sure all your listeners know that a cozy mystery is intended to be nothing but a nice light mystery. Opening scene is the beach. She says something about the beach is my happy place and describes the engagement party they're having at the beach and all that. You know, very much trying to keep everything really light other than the dead guy on the floor. Trying to keep it light, trying to keep it funny, and as Becky mentioned something about it being, you know, like the vanilla wafer. I'm finding, and a little bit maybe off topic, but certainly over the last year of the pandemic, I'm sure Becky will say the same thing, an awful lot of people have been writing to me saying how much they're enjoying reading cozy mysteries at this time. They're basically sick and tired of watching the news, being locked down in their house, not being able to go to fabulous things like the Poison Pen to meet their favorite authors. And a cozy mystery is what they want. They've had enough of the darkness of the world, and it's just something that is appealing, really popular right now that I've found. I think we've all found that. So, yeah, so that's the book.
Yeah. You kind of opened the door to this, Vicki, with your last response, but let's talk a little bit about what exactly is a cozy. How would you define it? What are the essential ingredients that you think should be included? And we'll start with Becky and see what she says.
Well, there's an official definition, which says no sex on screen, no violence on screen. You can have as many dead bodies as you want, but you better not kill them on the page. So there's those kinds of rules. One of the other rules is like a small town or an enclosed kind of organization of some kind. I don't really adhere to that one too much as far as setting goes. But for me, humor has to be a part of a cozy mystery. The ones I write and the ones I read are very, very much funny. I get a lot, very much funny. Yeah, I'm a wordsmith. So I get a lot of emails from people that say, you know, your books are what got me through the time in the hospital while my mother was dying, and, you know, things like that. Like Vicki was saying, you just need this escape. And for me, funny has to be a part of that definition, along with the general rules of cozies.
Yep. Can I?
Yeah, Vicki, please.
I would take that quite a bit further. I've heard that before. Cozy must have no overt sex and violence. But you can have a really dark psychological thriller that has no overt sex and violence. I mean, you can have a horror novel if it's psychological horror that has no violence and no sex. So to me, the essence of a cozy mystery is basically that there's no real tragedy in people's lives. People live in an extremely pleasant community, generally speaking. I'm speaking generally, right? In a pleasant community, they have a good circle of loyal friends or family. And something that has happened that's disrupted the unity of the town, the goodness of this town, making it a nice place to live. And they must put things back to rights, as opposed to a lot of police procedurals or the sort of darker PI where he or she may solve the crime, but the world doesn't ever get turned back to rights because they live in a fairly dark and nasty world. So I believe there's no real tragedy in a cozy. There might have been quite a few cozy protagonists are widowed, for example. But in terms of the book, like, you know, for absolute guarantee, there's going to be no child abuse. There's going to be no suggestion of a child abduction. There's not going to be any international terrorists. There's not going to be any of the mob. The character, none of the main characters is going to be murdered. Maybe the first book, you're not entirely sure who's the main character yet, but the friends of the main character are not going to be murdered. The protagonist is certainly not going to be murdered. It's about people who live in a good place and they want their lives to be returned to that good place. And they have their problems. There's always, you know, the protagonist usually has, you know, someone who wants her boyfriend, her job, or, you know, who is her quote unquote enemy within the context of the series. But again, it's, you know, we're not looking at somebody's going to poison their dog. You know, that's not going to happen. They're not going to nail their cat to the door, which, you know, would happen in some darker books. So to me, it takes that, no sex and violence up. You've got to take it a little bit up a level and expand it a bit more about what that sort of actually means.
Yeah. And it's kind of It's kind of interesting too, in my crossword mysteries with Quinn and her OCD, that has been kind of described as a bit edgy, which I find kind of interesting because, you know, yeah, we're talking about mental illness, but it's no different. I think every characters in Cozies too, is that there are people you want to hang out with, you know, they're real people in a place where you would like to visit or live. And Quinn's no different. Yes, she has OCD, but it's no different than the baggage we all carry. You know, we have diabetes, or we're deaf in one ear, or, you know, whatever the thing is that we have to deal with in our personal life, Quinn is dealing with her OCD. And it was interesting to me, because I didn't start out with Quinn having OCD, but what I thought was, who would be really good at making crossword puzzles? And that's how that character developed. And I have people in my life with OCD that were willing to sit down and, you know, talk to me about the ramifications of it in real world kind of situations and stuff, because it's perfectly livable. I mean, everybody, you can live with OCD with no problem. There's a million different kinds of ways to have OCD. They manifest in a million different ways. And so I was just always kind of surprised when people said, oh, that's a little bit edgy dealing with mental illness. And I thought, well, maybe, but
not really.
You know, I mean, it's very, you know, it's a real person. It's somebody with baggage, just like we all carry around. So I think that's kind of an interesting aspect. I think cozies are kind of moving toward that, you know, where characters can become more complex without getting much pushback from readers.
Well, I thought it was interesting, Becky, because I read somewhere that you queried cozy readers online as to what they hated about tropes. And you certainly got an earful.
I did.
And what I thought interesting was, so many of the things that these people said to you that they didn't like are pretty much the foundation of all the cozies on the market. So that's talk a little bit about that.
Well, and for everyone who said they hated romantic triangles, you know, there was an equal number who loved them, you know? So all of that, I mean, if you want to call research, you know, all of those responses were really interesting to me. And it was really opening up a can of worms, because for everybody who had one extreme opinion, there was another one that counterbalanced that. So I my takeaway was not, don't do that particular thing. It was, you can do anything, and you're going to make somebody happy and you're going to make somebody mad. So you better just be true to your story and your characters and stuff. But yes, people do have definite ideas.
I was going to say something about the romantic triangles too, because when I wrote, well, as I said, the Lytos Library series, my first venture into cozies. So I hadn't written any before. So I thought, well, you know, I've got to have this, that, and the other thing. And oh, look, I have a romantic triangle. And the number of people that have said, oh God, the dreaded romantic triangle. And a lot of, and so in a couple of my later series, the reviewers have said, thank goodness this book doesn't have a romantic triangle. And it's funny to me that something that you thought was almost expected to be turned out, my experience is that more people don't like them than do, because I think I've asked that question too. And a pretty heavy percentage didn't like it. So it's like so many other things in life, right? Where do these, sometimes these expectations happen, and it turns out that, well, nobody likes that, but everybody thinks that you like that, right? So but the cozy genre, as Becky alluded to, is expanding, particularly with, you know, getting some really diverse people involved in it from diverse communities, and more men who are not writing under women's name. They've always written romance, you know, particularly written, you know, romance under women's names, and there's more men, you know, writing cozies now. And but I think the diversity of the authors, and with the, of course, they bring the diversity of their own backgrounds to their writing too. I think it's expanding things really in a really positive way. Yeah.
Well, I think authors can get away with things that might not be perceived as being permittable. It's in the execution, how you do it. So if you don't do a romantic triangle well, then it's going to tick readers off. But if you do, they like it.
That's true. Yep.
Yeah, I don't have a romantic bone in my body, so I will never write any kind of romance in my books. I mean, they'll all be, I mean, even the romance, not only will the sex be off screen, so will the romance. So I'm not going to get in that kind of trouble with my readers.
Talk a little bit about your writing process. Mysteries require a certain kind of structure. There's a crime committed, people follow clues, you identify the criminal, so you look for that structure. When you're writing your books, are you a structured kind of writer? Do you know all those things in advance? Or do you kind of just take a roll of the dice and hope it's going to work out? We'll start with you, Vicki.
I'm now a structured writer, but I didn't start out that way. Because as I mentioned at the beginning, I wrote 8 police procedural novels and 3 standalone psychological suspense for Poison Pen. And I didn't outline at all. One of the Winter of Secrets, one of the Molly Smith books, I wrote the first paragraph because it was, I wrote the first chapter rather, with no idea what was happening or why it was happening. And then I wrote the whole book from there on, like one chapter at a time, and I didn't like that experience. That was too much. That was, you know, it was too much going back, because then you had to go back and set the motivation and the red herrings and all that sort of stuff. But then when I got the Lighthouse Library series and some of the other series I'm writing now, part of the original, the contract is that they want to see an outline for the next books and that. And once I started outlining, I found that I liked it a lot. So I do now have an outline. I don't usually even start writing my outline until I'm almost maybe a fifth to a quarter of the way through the book, because I do like to still do kind of what I did. So I sit down and I just start. I know where, so I get the initial setting, the initial characters, the guest characters, if you like, and get the whole thing moving. Maybe up to the point at which the murder happens or the body's discovered, then I stop and then I do my outline from there. because I find that really helps me get over that soggy middle. When you get in the middle and you don't know where you're going, you don't know what you're doing. Oh God, how will I ever sort all this out? If I have that outline, which to me is the hardest part of all, if I get that out of the way, and then I can write, I can enjoy when I'm doing a lot more because I have the hard part done. Some of my outline's not that complex. I will know who did it and why and what the various secrets are that the various people have. This way I work. But I'm going to add one little thing that John mentioned that made me think of it when we talked about what a cozy was. I also think essentially a cozy is a puzzle mystery, a true puzzle mystery. In the sense that almost a game of wits between the author and the reader, that the author must lay down the clues in such a way that the astute reader has a chance of coming to the conclusion moments before the character does, or moments before the big reveal. And the author has the challenge of hiding the significant clues in amongst all the red herrings and planting the red herrings and that, so that if the reader was to read the book the second time, everything would sort of be clear, knowing what's happened. Oh, of course, you know, in chapter 4, John changed from his black shoes into his blue shoes. Therefore, we now know the entire source of the murder. Not that any of my murderers are ever named John, of course.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's basically what I was saying.
How about you, Becky?
Well, my process, hearing Vicky or anyone talk about their non-outlining process gives me very, very sweaty palms. It makes me very nervous. I'm very much an outliner. In fact, I wrote a book about my process called 8 Weeks to a Complete Novel. Write faster, write better, be more organized. And I give workshops about that. For years and years and years, I did time management workshops and things like that. I can't even imagine sitting down to write the first word without knowing who did it, why they did it, who are the innocent suspects, what are my important clues that I have to drop. And so I follow, if you know anything about screenwriting, you've probably heard of Blake Snyder's
about a cat.
Save the Cat, yeah. He had an outlining process, and so I've adapted that to my use for novels. And so you go through these 15 beats. They're like the 15 things that have to happen in a story, and it's, you know, it's loosey goosey as far as I'm concerned. But it's I love that process. You just get to sit down, and it's, you just get to fill in all these blanks, just from your imagination, and you flow through these 15 things like waves, you know, until you are happy with it. And then from that outline, those beats, I write a synopsis, and it ends up being, you know, 20 or 30 pages. And it's basically me telling the story from start to finish. And it, it sounds very strident, you know, very, doesn't leave my room for growth, but it does. Each of those beats and each of that, all the story, I can go down a rabbit hole and go a different way. If something comes to me as I'm writing, I can still take that route. And if it works, great, then I'm still on my path. If it doesn't work, then I haven't wasted a lot of time. I can just unravel that little tiny piece, get back on my path, and follow it like I should have. And I just think of it as a map. Like you're driving from Los Angeles to New York. Yes. You know what route, you know that you have to be in New York at a certain time, and you know who's going to be in the car with you, and you know that you're taking this highway probably, but you don't know where you're going to be at lunchtime. And so at lunchtime, you end up being in Tulsa. Well, you don't know where you're going to eat in Tulsa. You don't know what's, you know, you don't know if it's going to be on the highway or, you know, into town or whatever. So you get to take these little side trips, but it doesn't screw up your big trip, your whole trip, by by taking these little side roads and stuff. So it's a very, I mean, I'm a very organized person. I love the Container Store. I love all those plastic bins. I love doing crossword puzzles. You know, I like the right answer at the right time, you know.
Well, I'm going to interrupt to mention that I remember now that you asked a bunch of writers to share their residue, if you will, of what's left over after you finished a book. And what inspired Becky to do that was that she was running out of room for all the binders that she has, all of her notes and everything. So she asked us to share what we have. And my answer was, I have nothing. I have not one single piece of paper. I have 42 published books now. I can't show you a single piece of paper. I have a couple of maps of Nag's Head and some maps of Cape Cod that I picked up on my travels. That's the only papers I have for all of those books ever, because I don't
write. And that gives me study poems too. Yeah, I have a binder. You know, I have the actual, like I said, we own a print shop, so technology and papers, you know, all over the place. So I have a three-ring binder that has the actual full manuscript in it. I have character pages. I have a picture of every character with kind of their Bible in it, you know, all that kind of stuff. So I don't have to keep it in my brain. I have sketches of their apartment or their, you know, pictures of their car or, you know, where their tattoos are and that kind of stuff. Cause I don't want to have to remember it because my memory is really bad. And so, so I just have each of these, in a binder, and you know, I have a big shelf and, you know, and it's so funny because it's just a security blanket for me. I shouldn't say that. I do go back on occasion, to like the first book in the series to say, what did I say about such and such, you know? And I wasn't good about keeping my Bible like I should have, you know, to have all of the information in it, in a place where I could access it, those kinds of things. So I'm having to go back and create that series Bible now. But really, I don't really go back and look, you know, at that stuff. But it makes me feel so much better to have it. and you know, it's not like I'm worried about losing the manuscript or anything, because it's everywhere. You know, every day when I work, I email the manuscript in progress to myself to two different email addresses. I mean, I'm never gonna lose it. My editor has it, my agent has it, you know, people have it. it's not like it's gonna be lost or anything, but it's just a security blanket for me.
Kind of the belt and suspenders approach to writing.
Yeah.
Both of you have been writing for some time now. What is the best piece of advice you would give to someone who's just starting out as a writer?
I'll start. Okay. My advice has always been the same. I actually have two pieces of advice. First is to read. I really believe you have to read. You have to read a lot. You have to read widely. You need to read the sort of thing you're trying to write, because you need to know what is happening these days. Writing changes. Nobody today is going to read a book styled on Charles Dickens, right? So you need to know what's out there, what people are looking for. But I think you also need to know what's good writing and what's bad writing. And you know, and the only way to do that is to read. You know, why is this sentence working for me? Why have I gone back and read it a second time? Is it so good? Or why have I skipped over this entire paragraph in this book? And why am I about to give this book up? Because I'm not enjoying it. I think reading is really important. And not just in what you're trying to write, but all the different subgenres, to see what everybody else is doing, essentially. And the other piece of advice I have is the value of networking. I really believe in networking, and it's okay. Things are a little bit harder right now, but organizations like I'm in Canada, Crime Writers of Canada, there's the MWA, there's Sisters in Crime. There are professional organizations, and there's also writers groups locally. Maybe your local library has a writers group or something like that. So that the friends that you make in the writing world can be some of the closest friends you've got. You know, to me, it's just I often think that when I started to write, the last reason I decided I was going to write a book was so that I would meet interesting people and make new friends. And that's turned out the best part of it all, you know, of all. So yeah, there's my two pieces of advice.
Yeah, I would absolutely agree. Reading and networking are two big pieces of that. I would, of course, add outlining. You should learn how to, and you know, okay, when I say outline, I know I sound really defensive about this, but I'm not really. But I think technically everybody outlines. Some of us just have to do it on paper because our memories are so bad. But I think it's very rare to have a writer who just wakes up one day and sits down at the computer and starts typing a story. I mean, I find that almost impossible to believe. And I think that the difference between plotters and pantsers, people who write by the seat of their pants, is the difference between how their brain works. My brain comes right out through my mouth or my fingers. But some people can hold a whole story in their brain. I mean, I don't even know my own phone number, so that's just not gonna ever work for me. So I think that's the difference. I think you have to find, and that's kind of what my book is about too, about finding the way that works for you to structure a story. And there's a million different ways to outline. And it doesn't have to be scary. It doesn't have to be, you know, a formal Roman numeral outline or even what I do, you know, it can be anything. So I would say to a new writer, find out the best way you write. What time do you write better? Where do you write better? Do you write better in a coffee shop or in your bedroom or on the couch or at a desk? I mean, experiment and find those things that work for you. And the other piece of advice I would give to a new writer is to decide what is success to you. You know, before you sit down to write, what are you trying to get out of this? Do you just want to entertain your friends? Do you want to have a bestseller? Do you want to get an agent and a publisher and go the traditional path? Or do you want to indie publish and do it yourself? Because all those are perfectly fine, but they take different skills and different paths to follow to get there. If you want to be a bestseller, then it's really hard to do that as an independent publisher because you don't get on the right lists that count those books, you know? So there's things to consider, you know, do you want to make a gazillion dollars? Or are you just happy with, you know, making a couple people happy? With my first book, when I was writing for kids, I got an email from a kid that said, I didn't like to read until I read your book. Well, you know, I could have been done right then. And that would have been enough, you know, that would have been fine. So decide what makes you successful in your mind, and then follow that right path to get there.
I've often found that most writers are also readers, and I'm always fascinated by what people are reading. So if you'd like, take a few minutes and tell us about what you've read this year or recently that you want to share with other readers, or maybe what you're looking forward to this year. And we'll start with you, Vicki.
The book I'm reading at the moment is, you'll be familiar with it, Find You First by Linwood Barclay. And the reason that I'm reading that is I'm interviewing Linwood via our local library at the end of the month, May 27th. If people would like to contact me or Picton, Ontario is where I live, and the Zoom call is open to everybody. We're doing it remotely. Hopefully we'll be able to do it. We have, well, 2 years ago, I guess, we did another event together at the library in which I interviewed him again, and it was really successful, so they want us back. And the local newspaper wrote up about it, and it said, Linwood Barclay will be discussing his new book, Find You First, in which the one-woman crime wave meets a best-selling author. Well, one-woman crime wave is my tag that I named myself. But anyway, that's not what Linwood's book is about. It's not about him meeting me, though maybe someday he will write that. No, but anyway, so that's what I'm reading right now. It's a real, you know, fast-paced thriller, high stakes. You don't know what's going on, several different points of view. I'm really enjoying it a lot. If that's your thing, and it's definitely my thing sometimes, I'm enjoying it a lot. So Find You First by Linwood Barclay. Other than that, the book that I probably enjoyed the most so far this year is The Survivors, or The Survivors or Survivors, I'm not sure, by Jane Harper. Jane Harper, to me, is maybe one of the best writers writing today, if not the best writing today. Her first couple of books, The Dry and The Lost Man, to me, are absolutely exceptional. Her Sense of Place books are all set in Australia. Sense of Place is unbelievable. If I'm ever asked again to do a workshop on setting, I'm just going to say, read this book. There's nothing I can say, right? Unbelievable. I would say The Survivors is not my favorite of hers. It's not her strongest, but you know, which is, but it's a heck of a high bar. I enjoyed it a lot. This one's set in Tasmania, seaside community in Tasmania, a mystery that goes back, you know, quite a few years. So anyway, that is Survivors. It's either Survivors or The Survivors. I'm 100% sure offhand, by Jane Harper. Highly recommend if people haven't read Jane Harper to start with The Dry, and The Lost Man is one of my favorite books of the last decade for sure. So that's, yeah. Ricky?
Well, I always hate this question because, like I said, my memory is like a sieve. So I can barely remember my own books, much less other people. But Vicki and I both belong to a group on Facebook called the Cozy Mystery Crew. And we're 12 authors, cozy authors. And we just got two new authors, Raquel Reyes and Esme Addison. And I haven't read either one of them, so I'm very much looking forward to that. And so you can just go on Facebook and find the group Cozy Mystery Crew. And I'm still working. I mean, that is a prolific group of people. I mean, just Vicki, how many books Vicki's written, you know, you can barely keep up. And so I'm in the process of reading everything because I'm kind of a newish member of that group. And so I haven't read everything from everybody yet, but I'm really looking forward to those two. Our two new members. And just yesterday I bought, I was at my local bookstore signing books that signing copies of Punning with Scissors that they send out. And I bought a copy of my friend Fleur Bradley's, it's Mystery at the Barclay Hotel. It's a children's book and it has won every single award. I've known Fleur for, I don't know, 20 years or something. And she is just phenomenal. She has a couple of really great middle reader series. And this is another new one. And she just has swept all the awards for anything this book is eligible for. She wins it. And so I am really looking forward to reading that, that children's book.
Okay, and what's gonna be next for you as an author? And we'll start with you this time, Vicki.
Next is Punning with Scissors just came out last week, and the third one in this series comes out in November, and that's called Fatal Solutions. And I'm in the process of getting the next three in the Mystery Writers series going. And I just finished a standalone that is a little bit darker than I normally write. And I'm hoping that my agent likes it enough that she will allow me to kind of step out of my cozy box for a little bit and see if I can do something that's a little bit darker. I'm just, in fact, on Monday, tomorrow, I go back. I wrote the first draft and I've gotten feedback from my beta readers. And now, and I, as you're writing along, oops, I forgot to say that. I meant to say that. You forgot. And so now I'm back just tomorrow, going to start with that second pass. So I'm hoping in the next couple of months, I can get that out and get some feedback on that. Because that's kind of exciting. You know, it's fun to do something different and to see if you're up to the challenge. And we'll keep our fingers crossed that I am. So I have a bunch of stuff upcoming.
That's you, Vicki.
Oh, my next book, actually I have two more books going out this year. Murder in a Teacup is the second in the Tea by the Sea series, published by Kensington. Obviously you can tell by there couldn't possibly be a cozier title than Murder in a Teacup, but it's part of the Tea by the Sea. Character owns a traditional afternoon tea room on Cape Cod. It's like my other book, you know, light and funny. And this one's a tiny bit different because there are recipes in it. I've never done recipes before, but because the character owns this tea room, so her scones and her cakes and her sandwiches and all that, we include some of those recipes. So that's sort of fun to do. You know, much testing is done at my house. of the recipes. And then in September, I have something, the first in my new series for Penguin Random House. The book is called Deadly Summer Nights, comes out in September. And this is the first in the Catskill Resort Mysteries. And this series is set in 1953 at a Catskill resort. And I've had a really enjoyed looking at the history because 1953, okay, that's, I don't have any memories of that, but not long after that, I can remember. I can remember my mother serving kind of canapes, you know, with celery with cheese whiz in it. So all that research I did into the clothes and the cars and the cocktails and the, you know, the food they served at the resort, the jello salads and the jello, you know, jello with canned pineapple for a fancy dessert or something like that, and the clothes they wear. And then it's a cozy series. There's some of the not so nice stuff. There's the cop that calls her honey and pats her on the butt as she walks by. In the first book, Deadly Summer Nights, the police are so convinced that the dead guy is a communist, they're not looking for anybody else. You know, so we deal a little bit with the Red Scare, but it's all still intended to be light and funny. And you know, basically kind of Marvelous Mrs. Maisel meets Dirty Dancing is kind of the feel that we're trying for with that series. So I hope people will look for that.
You know, it's funny that you talk about the recipes in the crossword mysteries. Just as a joke to my editor at Kensington, I included recipes. The Quinn's mother loves to work in the kitchen. It's her, you know, it's how she works and it's her palate. And she makes these crazy recipes that, you know, have no business people eating. And as a joke, I added the recipes in the back of the book. And she thought it was so funny and so perfect that she wanted me to actually do the book. So every book now has these ridiculous recipes in it. And the thing is, they have to be real recipes. I have to be able to make them and recreate them. And they are actual edible recipes, but they're silly recipes. But that's a lot of fun, but really hard also to do, like with the crossword puzzles. You know, it's one thing to say, oh, I'll make my own crossword puzzles. Oh, I'll make my own crazy recipes. Then you have to do it. It's a lot harder.
I can't believe our time is already up. I've so enjoyed speaking with our authors today, Vicki Delaney and Becky Clark. And thank you for tuning in to another virtual author event.
Thank you very much.
So much fun.
Hello. We hope you're enjoying our programs and podcasts with authors. We'd like to expand them, and your help would be appreciated. Please make a donation at poisonedpenfoundation.org. 100% of the proceeds will go to help connect authors with readers in this difficult time. Thank you.